Welcome to the Autism Mom MD podcast, where we discuss empowerment, growth, and inclusion for individuals with autism. And now your host, Dr. Carol Baltazar.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. B. Welcome to the Autism Mom MD podcast. First, I want to quickly remind everybody that my podcast is intended for educational purposes only and is not medical advice. Please talk to your doctor if you have questions. The views and opinions expressed by me and my guests are our own personal opinions. Today's episode highlights wandering and elopement. My first guest is Shelley McLaughlin. Shelley is the parent of a teenage son with Asperger's syndrome and is a program director at Pathfinders for Autism in Maryland. She has developed and conducted autism and intellectual developmental disability trainings for various organizations, including law enforcement agencies, fire departments, EMS staff, corrections officers, colleges, and other professional organizations. Shelley is a certified police instructor by the Maryland Police and Corrections Training Commission, CIT certified through Montgomery County Police, and certified in mental health first aid through Harford County Sheriff's Office. My second guest is Officer Lori Reyes. Officer Reyes has been a Montgomery County police officer for 23 years. In 2005, she created and implemented what is now called the Montgomery County Police Autism and Intellectual Developmental Disabilities, Alzheimer's, Dementia Outreach Program, and has served in this program since that time. Officer Reyes has received recognition from the White House as a White House Champion of Change for Youth and Law Enforcement. In 2018, she was recognized by the Department of Justice and received the Attorney General's Award for Distinguished Service in Policing. She also received a Governor's Citation for the creation and continued coordination of the Montgomery County Police Autism IDD, Alzheimer's, and Dementia Outreach Program. Please join me in welcoming Shelley and Officer Reyes. Hello.
Hi there.
Thanks for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you for having us.
Well, before we get into today's topic, I just want to ask you to tell us a little bit more about Pathfinders for Autism and the Autism Outreach IDD unit. So Shelley, can you tell us a little bit about Pathfinders for Autism?
Sure. We're the largest autism resource center in the state. So if families are looking for help for anything from finding a specialist to help navigating a system, we can do that with them. We also do workshops and trainings. So while I manage the first responder training division, we have other staff that do trainings for hospitals, schools, libraries, places of business. We also host workshops and conferences where we bring in experts on specific topics. And then we also do free fun events. So in normal years, that would look like renting out the aquarium for a night, renting out the science center for a night, doing sailing, rock climbing, baseball games. And actually this, so this past year, a lot of those fun events have been virtual. However, this summer, we are going back to in-person free fun events. And everything we do is free of charge.
Awesome. That's fantastic. Well, Officer Reyes, can you tell us a little bit more about the Autism Outreach IDD unit?
So our unit, like you said, began in 2005. And we did begin the unit because of the ever-increasing calls for what we now call at-risk missing persons. We average about 3 to 8 fines a week. We're usually not searching for, but we're rather locating. But our program has since grown, and we provide outreach from mundane calls all the way up to very serious calls. And of course, wandering and elopement through education, outreach, empowerment, follow-up, and response.
Let's just dive right into today's topic on wandering and elopement. Shelley, what is elopement?
So elopement is when a person leaves, I mean, basically bolts from an area without permission or notification, which unfortunately can lead to placing that individual in a potentially dangerous situation. Elopement is not something like a disgruntled teen that's mad about having her cell phone taken away and therefore runs away from home. Rather, this is escaping from either something unpleasant or trying to get to something pleasant.
How many kids with autism elope? Is there a statistic on that?
There are. So about 49% of kids with autism elope, and about a third are not able to communicate their name, address, or phone number, which often obviously poses a problem. Mm-hmm. But something to keep in mind is that a lot of these elopements are from a safe environment.
Shelley, why do individuals elope?
It could be for multiple reasons. It could be that they're lacking the communication skills that they need in order to express what they need. So if a child or an adult is hungry, they may elope to go to their favorite fast food place to get food. They may be trying to go someplace where that's a preferred place to them. My son used to, you know, has recently described that when he was younger, he used to leave the house just because he wanted to explore the neighborhood. He was curious, mm-hmm. and he didn't realize that at age four, that was dangerous for him to be walking around the neighborhood without an adult. It could also be that they're trying to escape somewhere or something that could be like an overstimulating environment. For instance, in classrooms, it's easy for a child to be overstimulated. You have fluorescent lights, and most of us are able to filter out the fact that fluorescent lights flicker and they have a sound. So for somebody with a sensory processing disorder, which is very common in individuals with autism, it could be like a strobe light with a piercing sound. And then add to that, if they are hearing every sound in the classroom at the same level, so every child that might be tapping on a desk or ruffling papers, and that's competing with anybody else in the room that might be talking, and they're supposed to be paying attention to a teacher that's giving instruction, that could be overwhelming. And if they're not able to communicate, I need a break, they may just get up and leave the classroom or try to leave the school building altogether.
Now, are there different ages for the kids when they elope? I mean, when I think of elopement, I usually think of like a younger kid wandering, but can it happen at any age?
It can start at any age. So for instance, we had a case in Harford County not too long ago where a 17-year-old on the autism spectrum had been out in his yard. It was a rather large yard on a four-wheeler, had never eloped before. And all of a sudden, just one day on the four-wheeler took off. And they found him on a really busy road in Harford County. So we always try to encourage families to have all of those tools and resources for wandering and elopement ahead of time before a crisis starts. Just because the child or the individual has never eloped before, in no way means that it can't start now.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of like, you know, crisis situations, what's the latest statistic on deaths related to wandering caused by drowning?
So it's actually 71% of the deaths that are related to wandering and elopement are caused by drowning.
Oh my gosh.
And we don't know why. We don't know what the draw to water is, whether it's the glistening of the water, so that visual stimulation, or the sound of the water. Also, a lot of individuals with autism find that deep pressure can be very calming. And when you're underwater, that water provides a pressure. Mm-hmm. Also, for somebody that is trying to deal with sensory processing disorder, where they may have very heightened sensitivities, when you're underwater, everything is muted. Sounds are muted. You don't have the visual stimulation. And something important to note is that that risk of drowning is the same year round. It is the same risk in January that it is in July. So we encourage families to teach your child to swim. And that doesn't need to be a beautiful swimming stroke. We're talking just doggy paddle, knowing how to tread water, knowing how to float. We have an online provider directory on our site at pathfindersforautism.org, and we do have swim schools and swim instructors. And there are times that we also do, as part of those free fun events that I mentioned, that we have done swimming events.
Okay. Officer Reyes, I wanted to ask how many individuals you find a week that have eloped?
Yeah, I do. Thank you for having me repeat that, because I think sometimes it can be shocking to hear that. We average about 3 to 8 fines a week. Of course, there are times when we're searching for, but in most cases, we locate the missing person before even the best of caregivers realize they're missing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's about 3 to 8 a week on average.
Oh my gosh, that's so scary. Can you talk to us then about the importance of calling 911 immediately?
Yeah, so when we teach caregivers and we work with caregivers, so part of our education is officers, caregivers, individuals, and the broad community. So when we talk about calling 911, it's important when you say that you can back it up with officers that are educated responding and officers that are prepared with the tools to respond effectively. We encourage caregivers to call 911 right away. Don't look on your own for the individual. Sometimes a parent, I'm a parent myself, they'll think, oh, I dropped the ball. I can't call 911. I don't want the police officer in front of my house or to be judged because I can't find my 4-year-old, my 5-year-old, or my adult that has autism. And what we say is, you're not alone in this journey. Call 911, even if you call us right back and say, I found my child. But we can deploy resources. And in areas where you may not have the resources that we do, be an advocate for your child when you call 911. Be calm, be assertive, and say what you need and the dangers that are there, that are present with your child who has autism. So you can call 911. Just please call 911 right away.
Well, what information should parents and caregivers be prepared to give to the officers?
So first and foremost, the one thing that I share with parents is stay calm, right? Take a deep breath. Be that mama bear or papa bear or whatever your role is in the child or individual's life. Be calm when you call. Make sure that you say the diagnosis. And oftentimes that'll get forgotten. So under stress, meaning if you have a 5-year-old who has autism, any 5-year-old that's missing is going to be dangerous, right? Potentially. But if you have a 5-year-old who has autism and they're nonverbal, well, then that's obviously kicks it up considerably. Mm-hmm. So when you call 911, stay calm, give the diagnosis, give possible places, destinations, be aware of the dangers that are around you. Print out a Google map. Be aware of where the ponds are, drainage ditches, pools in your neighborhood, so that when you call 911, you are the advocate. You are empowered to provide that information and you're in control. It's really important because if you're screaming into the phone, it delays resources. So have that mental mindset when you call.
Right. That's great advice. So do you think it's good then to tell friends and neighbors that your child has autism and may wander?
Yeah, so we came up with what's called our autism IDD neighbor letter. And again, I get it, right? We're parents, do you want to share information with neighbors that you may not know that your child has a disability? So the comfort level is yours, right? We just encourage you to let your neighbors know of the propensity, the likelihood that your child has to wander. And that can be done with a simple neighbor letter. You just let them, give them a little information about the diagnosis, the likelihood of wandering, and some basic information, as much as you feel comfortable, because you can many times have a neighbor that sees your loved one who has autism, but they don't know to get involved, or they just don't. Mm-hmm. Or you could have a child or adult that wanders into somebody else's home. So it's really important to provide your neighbors also with the tools. But again, as a police officer, as a mom, whatever your comfort level is.
Right. I mean, I totally agree with that, because I mean, I could just imagine if like a child, you know, say you have a teen and they're older and you do give them permission, you know, to go out for a walk or something and go exercise, but then they wander off somewhere and, you know, and a neighbor, somebody in the neighborhood might just be like, oh, they're just on their walk and not think anything of it.
Yeah, it's good to share if you feel comfortable sharing. And you're absolutely right. We navigate in law enforcement. We navigate the various independence levels of those who have autism. And we don't want to limit potential, but mm-hmm. we just want to make sure that the right information is there, also provided to your loved one who does walk the neighborhood, right? What do mm-hmm. you do? So those are conversations to have with your loved one as well.
Mm-hmm. So I also wanted to ask you, Officer Reyes, can you talk to us about school elopement?
So we're very fortunate here in Montgomery County. We have an excellent partnership with our school system. And of course, like any other situation, you could have excellent caregivers and still have an episode of elopement. Like Shelley was saying, sometimes the school environment can just become overwhelming for an individual on the spectrum. And in our case, we handle those much the same. We educate all of the staff and about what they should do in the event of an elopement. They should call 911 right away, the information that they should relay to us. And we also encourage family members, if you have a loved one that has a likelihood propensity to elope, you should let school know so that that can be part of the IEP, the safety plan for that individual. Don't ever feel like you can't share that. Always share the likelihood, the possibility of elopement. And like Shelley says, somebody can have a first time elopement, you know, much older. So it's just important to make sure your school is aware and also let them know, if my child elopes, please call 911 immediately. Mm-hmm. Don't have the principal call or the front desk call. You know, the person who last sees my child needs to call 911.
So I wanted to just backtrack a little bit. I didn't realize that an elopement could be added to the IEP. Is that just in Montgomery County, or you can in general just ask for that to be included in the IEP?
Correct. And actually, we have an article on our website, and it's Wandering an Elopement at School. And a special education advocate actually wrote that article for us and kind of lays out the guidework for how you would write that into an IEP.
Oh, okay. And the other thing that I wanted to ask is that, you know, it's been a while since my kids were in elementary school, but, and of course now with COVID, there's no field trips, but pre-COVID, kids on field trips. So what do you find typically happens then? Like, let's say the parent who's chaperoning on a field trip all of a sudden notices, oh my gosh, this, you know, where is Bobby? Where is he at? And they can't find him. So can the parent just call 911 immediately?
Well, in that case, what we would encourage, whoever is with the child last, if they can stay with the child, right? So they see them, then uh-huh. stay with them. But the last person to see that child should be calling 911 because they have the most up-to-date information. So what we don't want to happen is that the chaperone calls the parent, right? So that's valuable time lost. Mm-hmm. Somebody else can call the parent, mm-hmm. but the person who is last to see the child should be the one calling 911. That's the most important message for me to relay.
Right. So it shouldn't be like parent calling teacher in charge of the field trip, then teacher in charge calls the front desk and front desk calls the principal, then principal calls.
No, not at all. All of those calls can be made by somebody else. But okay. The person that's most closely associated with that child, the last person to see them, they call. So it has to be like a whole village approach where one person's calling 911, maybe two people are calling 911. And that person is relaying information instantaneously, because that calling multiple people, in many cases, schools will have the front desk call mm-hmm. and the front desk then has to use a radio to talk to the person. No, mm-hmm. My suggestion is the person that last sees them needs to be the one calling 911.
Yeah. And most likely they might have an idea of like, you know, have a better idea what the child was wearing. I mean, because I mean, I've chaperoned in on field trips and it can be overwhelming where I'm like, oh my gosh, I have like 10 little kids that watch after. I was like, wait, what jacket, what color jacket?
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Yeah, I get it.
So no, that's good to know in terms of like a protocol and who should be making that 911 call. So then the other thing, I think I read somewhere that there's also an ICD-10 code that you can use for wandering, right? You can code for that and then be reimbursed for like any identification tools or something, just even at school for field trips and stuff like that.
So what the ICD-9, so we really pushed many years ago to get it passed for insurance companies so that you could submit for reimbursement or payment of tracking tools, other safety tools. And you really have to check with your insurance company, the coverage that's offered, and your doctor. And yes, there is a medical coding specific to that.
So here's where, okay, so I had called multiple health insurance companies and spoke to a few GPS vendor companies. And the way they explained it is that where you start is you go to the vendor organization. So if you want to order a specific, let's say, tracking device or a specific identification tool, then you need to ask that company if they have a CPT code. And that's a unique 5-digit code that identifies to the insurance companies what care was provided to the patient by the vendor. Then you call the insurance company and ask them if they will accept that CPT code. And that can be different between insurance companies.
Okay.
And Doc, I know we're going to talk about it, but just we'll talk about other safety measures first. Tracking is the absolute last step in safety.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to ask you, Officer Reyes, is that pre-COVID, you know, visiting local police and fire department precincts would be a good way to introduce our kids to first responders. But what can parents do now virtually?
So, you know, even virtual, we're still out in the community. We encourage our officers to, if an individual approaches you, a mom and a child or the child or whomever, we do really encourage that interaction. So of course, in COVID, it's a little bit different, but you still can have those interactions spontaneously in the community. And I think what's most important, at least for us, is don't ever use police as a punishment. Meaning, if you don't keep your seatbelt on, the police are going to arrest you. In fact, when I walk into a room or a, you know, a restaurant and someone says, oh, she's going to arrest you, you haven't had your seatbelt on, I actually will kneel down and say to the child, I'm not going to arrest you. I care about you. I just please wear your seatbelt. So I really encourage parents never use us as the tool for punishment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that's real important. And because that actually that brings about a flashback for me, because I think I have said that. Like if you don't if you don't wear your seatbelt when they were little,
if you don't put
that seatbelt on, I'm like, oh,
no. That's all right. We're all winging this parenting thing. It's fine.
Oops.
You mentioned in the parent handbook that you don't say that.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, we start talking a little bit about identification tools, but I'd like to talk about some identification tools that parents can get for their kids.
Okay, I'll start and then I'll let Shelly do the others. So
Sure. We
in Montgomery County, for years, I've always said, because we locate so many individuals before we know where they belong and caregivers have called us, that can lead us to have individuals in our care for hours, even little guys, 4 or 5, we can have them in our care for a long amount of time. So the identification bracelet, it can be very simple, something that's cut to fit. And the engraving can be just as simple as a first name and maybe 3 good cell phone numbers of people that will answer their phone. And again, that can be made part of the IEP. Wearing the bracelet can be part of a social story and a safety plan at school. It's that important for me. And one last thing regarding that. So it's also important, if you feel comfortable, have your child, if you see an officer having breakfast or lunch at Chipotle, say to your child, say to the officer, can my child show you his identification bracelet? to create that interaction, to know, to show the bracelet to the officer if they're ever in crisis or lost, or, you know, or they, mm-hmm. they come upon an officer.
Now, unfortunately, not every individual can tolerate the feeling of a bracelet or the feeling of, you know, one of the tags on a necklace. So there are also some alternative identification tools that we like to make parents aware of. So first of all, you can get a state ID at any age. Now, of course, we realize that often it's the parents that are carrying, though, the state ID. There's also, there's temporary tattoos that you can have customized. There's a company called Safety Tat that you can have contact information printed on the tattoo, or you can have it blank that you can write on. An alternative to that is using a Sharpie marker and then covering that with the liquid Nu Skin that kind of seals it. And again, we don't endorse any particular product, but we have done some partnerships with a company called ifineedhelp.org, and they offer shoe tags and other products like clothing patches, stickers, seatbelt covers that have a QR code on it. And that QR code is tied to a particular record in a database. And the families can put whatever information they are comfortable with into that database. And then if an officer finds the individual, scans that QR code, then everything that the caregivers listed in the database will come up on a website for the officer.
Okay. Well, can wearing an ID bracelet then be part of an IEP?
Yes. Or you can ask for it to be part of the IEP. We actually partner with our school system, and they work to get a grant for the ID bracelets. So they made it part of their curriculum and developed a PowerPoint presentation. They did a fantastic job of incorporating the request I had to provide ID bracelets. So yes, you can make that part of the IEP.
Okay. And then, so would it work like they would help, the school gets the bracelet then, and then they help teach the child and get them used to wearing the bracelet? Is that how it would work? So that, especially if a child has sensory challenges.
Yeah. So I say you got to start somewhere. And in Montgomery County, you know, you could say, oh, my school district doesn't offer that. But that's something that if you're in a district that's not offering that, be the parent that says, hey, listen, can we offer this as part of, one, the IEP, but two, something to have my child get used to wearing and possibly overcoming those sensory challenges.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I wanted to ask you about then is about these autism or IDD disclosure cards, right? And I mean, I know that I've seen it and I've heard about these cards. So I think, and I could see it applicable for a kid, not a child, but someone who's a driver who may panic and freeze and have a hard time communicating with the officer if he or she gets pulled over. What are some of the things that would be on that card? I mean, or even if we were to make our own, like what's like the information that you would want to put on there?
So we actually have those cards available that we offer free of charge, and it will say that on there, you know, some tips for, you know, whether it's the officer that they're presenting the card to, you know, it lists, you know, things that can help me. And it lists a few things, you know, that are related to sensory issues, communication. It also has space for an emergency contact where you can fill that out.
Okay.
Yeah. And I want to real quick, just not related to driving. If I have a second. So we had a case of a young man who was 16 that thank goodness he had some independence. And he was able to, he would take walks around the neighborhood. But neighbors and community members were calling us because some of his behaviors, you know, I guess some folks thought, well, he shouldn't be out walking alone, but he could be, and he was able to. And so what would happen is that we would get the call and approach him, and he would lose most of his verbal communication skills. But, you know, it's nervous when an officer approaches you. So initially, he was very angry that officers approached him time and time again. So finally, I responded to one of those calls, and I asked, he had his mom on FaceTime, which was genius. And his mom was upset that officers kept going to him. And I said, well, listen, let me share something with you. If he provided, right, until we work this all out, if he provided just a card that says, I am independent, I have autism and I am nonverbal and I'm on a walk or whatever wording mm-hmm. you wanted to use, then it would alleviate that. And officers eventually would get that call and say, oh, well, that's Bobby. He's good. Let him be. Mm-hmm. So we need that communication, that self-disclosure, however form it comes in, is so important, as those individuals are navigating to discover their own level of independence.
Yeah. And I guess the flip side of it is that would be concerning is if a child or a teen doesn't identify, well, they have autism, but then they don't want to say that they have autism.
Yes, we encounter that. So here's what I say. Self-disclosure is a personal choice at your time and your place. But I think planting the seed of why self-disclosure is important can be a valuable tool. But I get it. Not a kid who's on the spectrum that's like with his friends and, you know, maybe he doesn't want to say mm-hmm. I have autism, or maybe he just doesn't want to. And you know what? That is his choice
right.
to say it or not say it. But all I do is give you the tools as to why I think I would want to know, so I can make accommodations for you if you were on the autism spectrum.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the other thing when in terms of safety, and we were talking about disclosure cards, I mean, I guess we could should listeners also mention interests and hobbies? Because I could see, I tell my kids, don't talk to a stranger, like, you know, don't open the door for strangers, or, you know, so, you know, you have to be able to build some rapport with the child and be able to communicate with them if they're in a crisis situation, and just let them know it's okay to come with me.
So I'll speak to that. Yeah. Any information that we have is good. Uh-huh. However, that's relayed to us. If it's a parent that's calling 911 and they're relaying that information, yes, 100%. It matters to have that rapport with any individual in the community, but mm-hmm. particularly those on the autism spectrum. So yes, the answer is always yes. The more information that can be provided at that individual's comfort level, we're so appreciative of.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, Laurie, would you agree then that includes the person's passions? So if the officer knows that this individual is really passionate about dogs, then you can build the rapport, say, hey, by the way, you know, I have a dog. Would you like to see pictures of my dog? And also those triggers, what might upset the individual and what are some of the individual's calming mechanisms and coping
skills? Yes.
Well, I also wanted to talk then about technology. Can you tell us about some available technology options that are out there for parents?
So I'll touch on that and then I'll give it to Shelley. So I want to first say that tracking any technology should be the absolute last step, especially as it relates to tracking. Tracking is getting better, but it's not a perfect tool. And there's challenges. So if you look into tracking, make sure you read the reviews of the product. Make sure you understand the difference between RF, radio frequency, GPS, and Bluetooth. You know, those are all things to really be mindful of. And again, what I can't stress enough is that we almost always locate the individual before family members even realize. So tracking has to be the last tool. There are other tools, you know, again, there's cameras, there are doorbell cameras that will say there's motion detected, alarms, different, you know, locking mechanisms that can be effective tools. But again, what's most important is that confidence in knowing that it's okay to call 911 and be an advocate. That's the most important tool, and the identification bracelet, mm-hmm. in my opinion. Tracking is getting better, but it's the last step. So just mm-hmm. do your homework. And Shelley, I'll give it to you. Sorry, I'll put you on the spot, Shelley.
No, I agree with everything you've said. And as a matter of fact, we do have a PFA tips article on tracking devices. And it does mention all of the points that Laurie just mentioned, especially since Laurie reviewed the article for us. And it gives you a questionnaire of these are the things that you need to think about when you are investigating tracking devices. And it emphasizes that tracking devices should not be the first go-to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, for me, I actually use the app Life 360. Mm. So I like that a lot.
Good tool. You're right. If your loved one, you're right. I think as a parent, we all love that, even though our kids don't. But yes, there are. If your child has a cell phone and utilizes and carries a cell phone, yes, indeed, those tracking apps are fantastic on a cell phone because you're going to charge your cell phone and it'll be active. So yes, yeah, sorry. Thanks for mentioning that, Doc. I do agree. There are some great tracking apps for individuals that are carrying cell phones.
Mm-hmm. And that Life 360, that is not just good for individuals with autism. I have my neurotypical teenage daughter on 360.
So oh, I know. Me too. Like all my kids.
Yes.
Actually, my kids track us because then they know, oh my gosh, okay, this is like totally off topic, but they know when I'm going to come home because I know they start like cleaning the kitchen and stuff. They're like, mom's almost home. Because I'm like, wait, I get into the house. I'm like, huh, looks like things just got tidied up real quickly. Like, you know, the dishes are still wet. And I'm like, oh, I knew you guys were tracking me on Life 360. So, well, speaking of the home, can you tell us like what are some home modifications that us parents and caregivers can do to help with keeping our home safe?
I mean, there's the basics. There's the additional locks. You know, you have the locks that require a key. You have the locks that you can put at the very top of external doors. You know, there are families that turn the bedroom doors, they reverse them so that they lock from the outside. There's bars for windows. There's alarms that you can put on doors. Something, though, that we always point out to families that a lot of the things I just mentioned are also fire hazards. So that's something to keep in mind in the event of a fire, you know. Is everyone going to be able to get out safely if you're trying to find keys for the double locks? So, Laurie, you may have some better.
Yeah. So coming from a point of view of balancing safety and fire safety, I understand when I do see sometimes that the measures that parents have taken, I actually like the key, the cipher locks that have a code to get in and out. But again, our guys are smart, right? It doesn't take long for them to figure out the code. So again, you really have to, it's a personal choice of balancing fire safety and elopement and wandering safety. Again, sometimes you can get alarms on the doors or a camera or, you know, those modifications so that you're aware when the wandering takes place, you don't sleep through it. But again, like always in life, it's a balance of kind of navigating what works best for your family.
Well, and like we have a Ring doorbell at the house. And so anytime somebody walks out the door, you know, the alarm goes off on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you, Shelley and Officer Reyes, where can we find safety resources? Can you share some websites?
So on our website, if you go to pathfindersforautism.org, there is a section that's resources. And right there under resources is safety. And then inside safety, we have everything from cyber safety to wandering and elopement to identification tools, the tracking devices, the different counties that have 911 flagging systems. So we have all of that in one place, and actually including water safety as well.
Did you want to add anything, Officer Reyes?
So I think that you can find resources again, whatever your comfort level is, I guess that's what I wanted to share. You know, as far as, you know, it's limitless, but it has to be at your comfort level and kind of balancing that fire risk too.
Well, that concludes our podcast for today. Thank you, Shelley and Officer Reyes, for talking to us today about wandering and elopement. Thanks everyone for joining us today. Stay well, and I will talk to you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Autism Mom MD podcast. If you like what you heard, please tell a friend, spread the word, and leave a review on iTunes. For any questions, comments, or suggestions for topics you'd like to hear on the podcast, please join our Facebook group, Autism Mom MD, or visit us on the web at www.autismmommd.com.